At the risk of generating eye rolls, I'll offer up the following. Becoming something of an amateur birder is a lot of fun. I have shared on here before that prior to working for the refuge, my birding knowledge was largely relegated to the ones I was shooting at, or the ones I saw with great frequency while shooting at other things. My knowledge of things like songbirds, beyond robins, shorebirds, waterbirds, and seabirds, was almost wholly non-existent. Working for the refuge, in the capacity I do, changed that, and I'm pretty sure that nothing was said about it being a part of the job when I took the job. Be that as it may, I enjoy watching and identifying birds now, though I am hesitant to call myself a serious birder, for a number of reasons. Still, if you want to talk birds, I'll be your huckleberry. Side note, if that comment made no sense whatsoever, you really need to make it a point to see the movie Tombstone. Seriously. Today, let's talk birds just a bit, from a few different angles. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. Watching and identifying birds is, I'll admit, something of an acquired interest. It's not something everyone is probably going to get something out of, though I guess that's also true for pretty much anything. I will say this. If you're looking for a fairly low-cost, low-investment hobby, birding would be hard to beat. When I talk to kids, I make a point of sharing that all you really need is your eyes, and that's true. A few other items sure do enhance the experience, though. Things like a field guide, a pair of binoculars, and putting out bird food close to your home. Even when considering those three things, it's a very low investment hobby to start for most people. Most of us have binoculars anyway. A good bird identification book can be had for less than $10 on Amazon, and a basic food, such as sunflower seed, costs less per month than a few days' beverages at your favorite coffee shop. Let me offer up what we have at our house, and I do so not because it's right, and also I share this in full realization of the fact that some of you listening have far more devoted setups. I use primarily two types of feed, suet blocks and black sunflower seed. The sunflower seed has several places near our porch where it's placed, and it's placed both high and low, because different bird species have different feeding styles. The suet is placed in metal cages made especially for suet blocks. With this, we get the following birds in the winter. Boreal chickadees, black-capped chickadees, red-breasted nuthatches, pine grosbeaks, juncos, common redpolls, and downy woodpeckers. We also get camp robbers and magpies wanting to horn in on it all, though I try to discourage them, as they seem to cause the smaller species to stay away. We've also had some oddballs through the years. Crossbills when they are present in the area, wrens on a few occasions, and even a spruce grouse for several weeks during a frigid stretch one year. And speaking of frigid stretches, when it's cold like it has been, the birds are at our place, sun up to sun down, getting what they can while they can. Each species has its own unique little feeding styles and quirks. Having all of that close at hand, ours is near our front porch and by our kitchen window, is what makes watching birds so much fun. Shifting gears just a little bit, putting out feed can inadvertently lead to sightings of other species. With all of the seed I put out, and I tend to be very generous with it because I like watching birds around our neighborhood and because I think having a strong supply is probably a good thing in weather like this, we also have a lot of other critters that find their way to our yard. The seeds that wind up on the ground attract a lot of red-backed voles. They are not exactly shy about their presence. They, in turn, attract other predators. I've seen weasels on a number of occasions, and even got a video a few years back of one going through our garbage cans. The last several days, we've had yet another predator, and a bird at that, a boreal owl. I like to think that, indirectly, the voles feeding on the bird seed were somewhat feeding the owl. It's been a mainstay on our porch railing, totally focused on the sunflower seed on the ground by the porch, and it's pretty tolerant of people, as we can get within a few feet to watch and it doesn't seem to care. I have to believe that the spike in voles due to the bird seed makes our porch area something of a golden corral for an owl. At any rate, this one boreal owl sure seems to like us of late, and it's been a really cool species to see up close. I'm sure you see it coming now. So, what do you know about boreal owls? The The boreal owl is named for the boreal forest that it most often calls home. It is one of the smaller owls in Alaska, and the second smallest we have around the refuge area. Boreals are about 8 to 9 inches long, with a wingspan of almost 2 feet. Female boreal owls average a little over 6 ounces, and they are larger than the males, as is common with raptors. The facial disc that all owls have to some degree is whitish with almost black upper corners and raised white eyebrows, which often gives the boreal a comical startled look. The eyes are yellow, and the top of the head has numerous small white spots. The bill is light-colored. Its overall coloration can vary widely between individuals, with some having a reddish-brown appearance, while others appear more gray. Upper parts are dark brown with bold white spotting. The breast is off-white, with broad streaks of darkish brown, denser on the breast, and trailing off at the lower belly. The tail is short and brown. The legs and feet are covered with white feathers. Claws are blackish-brown and have very sharp black tips. The boreal owl is actually a rarely seen species because it is, largely, both nocturnal and solitary. Obviously, that goes out the window to some degree when you have a nice porch railing in close proximity to an abundant food supply. During the day, they are known to roost close to a large tree trunk in dense vegetation near hunting areas, which has me wondering if some of the larger trees at our place is where this one is hanging out during daytime hours. Boreal owls usually hunt by perching on low branches or tree trunks. They scan the ground by moving their heads slowly from side to side, something I've been able to watch of late firsthand. They have excellent directional hearing, which they use to listen for the movement of potential prey animals. When something is located, they quickly descend on it. They like to feed on small rodents, especially voles, but also won't pass on shrews, small birds, and squirrels. Like most owls, they do not construct nests. The female often lays her eggs in old woodpecker cavities. 3 to 7 eggs are the normal number laid, though it can be as many as the high teens. Eggs are white and laid in late spring. As with other owls, survival rates for the chicks depend on the availability of food. They are solitary birds even during breeding season. Mated pairs don't roost together and normally only meet up during courtship and feeding. The male uses both song and food to win the affections of a female. And when I say food, males will sometimes feed females for up to 3 months prior to nesting, something he continues to do throughout the nesting period. Across North America, males and females form monogamous pairs for a single breeding season. Interestingly enough, across Europe, where they're also found, males mate with more than one female. Speaking of locations, across our continent, boreal owls are found throughout the forested parts of Alaska, a whole lot of the same type of habitat in Canada, down through parts of the Rocky Mountain states in the lower 48. I feel very fortunate to have had the opportunity of late to see one firsthand and to watch its behaviors. I don't know how long it'll continue to hang with us, but maybe as long as the food holds out, it'll hang in there. If you've never seen one and would like to, I'd encourage you to drop by our office. We have a boreal owl mount. It's right by the door as you walk in. One last bird-related note. I am in the wind-down portion of presenting for the Alaska Migratory Bird Calendar. We've been able to visit with a lot of schools about the calendar, and to do what we can to drum up interest in area kids to want to participate. I still have a few visits left myself over the next week or so, and look forward to sharing about birds with our area's students. Hopefully in doing so, it'll spark an interest in them to want to get into birding. In closing, I'd like to give a shout-out to the community of Non-Dalton. Some of you have heard me mention before that it was a teaching job in Non-Dalton that brought me to Alaska, and I spent 6 years teaching and coaching there. I absolutely loved my time there, and it was very much home. Well, last week I got to travel to Non-Dalton for work, and it felt like going home. The kids I taught way back when are now the adults, and it was a huge joy to see them again. One of the things I got to do while I was there was talk to classes about the bird calendar. In particular, I'd like to thank Fawn, Christy, and Michelle, who did a lot to make my visit work. I'm not sure anyone over there will actually hear this episode, but thank you to everyone for the graciousness in helping me to get my work done. I hope it won't be that long again before I next get to visit. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.